Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Halbrook, Judge Rodenberg, Judge Smith, the Honorable Joe Flaskam Halbrook presiding.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being available and being early. I'm sure you're contending with the same or worse weather than we are here in the Twin Cities, so it's quite a day. I know we have counsel in two different locations, in Wilmer and in Olivia, but our marshal has assured us that we have connections with both locations, so I feel safe in making that assumption going forward. As you know, of course, you each have 15 minutes in, for your arguments in chief, and then appellant will have up to 5 minutes in rebuttal time as well. So let us begin with counsel for appellant, please. If you could approach
John Mack for appellant. Can you see me?
We should be able to very soon, Mr. Mack. It's usually activated by voice, so keep talking. Let's see. So
far, okay. Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
We have you now.
Good.
Okay.
I'm going to spend most of my time with respect to the issue of relative search. Obviously, I'm not going to give up on the other issues, but since I have only 15 minutes, I'd like to speak to what I think is the strongest issue here. Minnesota Statute 260C.221 requires not only a relative search, but perhaps more importantly, relative involvement. Ms. Garberick, who is obviously the aunt of the child in this case, filed a petition for transfer, and she was told by the Child Protection Agency in Renville County that don't bother, you're not going to get him. Now, the statute and the case of DD make it clear that the relative search required by the section shall be comprehensive. After a finding that the agency has made reasonable efforts to conduct the relative search under this paragraph, the agency has a continuing responsibility to appropriately involve relatives who have responded to notice under this paragraph in planning for the child and to continue to consider relatives according to the requirements of Section 260C. 212 subdivision 2. Now, Ms. Garberick testified that she saw the child typically about once a week, and when she first started with Child Protective Services, she gave Child Protective Services extensive indications about her living conditions, her relationship to Cole, the child, and the reasons why she wanted the child. Essentially,
can I just make one request of both counsel? We try to use initials for children. I realize that the child's name is throughout the brief, and so there's we already have sort of lost some of his identity protection. But if we could, for purposes of argument, use initials or refer to him as a child.
Okay, very good, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Mack.
Now, when we are talking about the child in this case, it seems clear that there is insufficient input from the county indicating that it looked at the child, it looked at Ms. Garberick, and it came up with a good solid reason why Ms. Garberick should not be the custodian of the child. In particular, the court didn't make any kinds of serious findings as to why Ms. Garberick should not be the custodian of the child. It indicated, well, she is closer and she will look out more for Mr. Sheeler's, MS's, interest than the interest of the child. And I submit that that's insufficient. There aren't enough findings to indicate what that conclusion is based upon, and there isn't enough in the record to indicate what that finding is based upon. We have an aunt who is very close to the child. We have an aunt who has been involved with the child all her life. And about the only negative comment about her is that she's very close to her brother. I submit that the answer to that is that's irrelevant. Unless she's going to do something with respect to her brother that's going to prejudice the child. Well, about the only thing that the court and Child Protective Services came up with is that Mr. MS might continue using drugs in this case in the presence of the child. The problem is, A, there's no indication that she would allow this, and in fact she denies this, and perhaps more importantly, there's no evidence that this had ever happened, that in fact he used drugs at Ms. Garberick's in the presence of the child.
One specific finding, I'm just looking at, as you're speaking, number 15, When he is talking about Ms. Garbarek, he says, she admitted during her testimony to allowing her loyalty to her brother overcome any protection toward the child.
That's, first of all, that's extremely weak. If you're going to say that this is going to prejudice the child, that one statement, you better have a pretty good search of, not search isn't the word, but investigation of her house, of her findings, and so forth. Using that particular language to overrule 609.221 seems to me to be contrary to both the spirit and the letter of the statute. If you were going to use something like that, and if you thought that that was a really serious issue, they should have contacted her at length, they should have observed her at length, they should have observed her home at length, and they should have had enough evidence that this would really cause a problem. Of course she's close to her brother. Of course she's close to her nephew.
Well, it wasn't closeness, it was that she, her loyalty was to her brother. So were there a circumstance, you know, where the two were at odds, if their interests were at odds, the court was concluding that her loyalty then would be to her brother, to the child's expense.
Yeah. A, how do we know that? And B, maybe more important, what kind of situations are involved where loyalty to her brother would override the loyalty to the child when she explicitly says that she isn't going to allow her brother to use drugs in the presence of the child, nor is she going to allow her brother to be in the home if she thinks that he's been using, or to allow him to be around Cole. Now, this is consistent, by the way, with loyalty to her brother, because her brother's best interest, as well as the child, is to stay away from drugs and to stay away from drugs in the presence of the child. There's nothing wrong with loyalty. There's nothing wrong with loyalty to both your brother and to your child. And she never once indicated that she wouldn't be loyal to the child, or that if she thought that the child's best interests were being prejudiced, that she wouldn't protect the child from anything that her father might well do. There's every indication that Ms. Garbarek would have been an acceptable parent. She's been married 12 years, she's raised four children, now adults, she's employed, and she has an established relationship with the child. In view of evidence like this, a one-paragraph dismissal of Ms. Garbarek as a proposed parent is unconscionable, particularly when there hasn't been an investigation by welfare, which would indicate that there's a solid basis to say that what I've just been saying is trumped by some other evidence or indications that she would be a problematical parent. What cases there are point to a preference for placement with a relative. Perhaps the closest of them is Welfare of a Child of D.D., where the court says,
that's because D.D. and... That's an unpublished opinion, correct?
That is true. In fact, and one of the problems in this area is there are so many unpublished opinions, about 85% of what's really interesting in the child welfare case is in unpublished cases, but it has some relevance. Because DD and GM contest the relative search as it relates to the homesteady, we look to the relevant statutes that require the department to conduct a relative search. When a child is determined to be in need of protection or services, the district court, quote, must ensure the responsible social services agencies makes reasonable efforts to finalize an alternative placement plan for the child. Reasonable efforts to finalize a permanent placement plan for the child include due diligence by the responsible social services agency to conduct a relevant search and to provide notice to adult relatives as required. Now, I think that's good law. I can't see anything in either of the statutes or in the relatively few published cases that would say that that isn't. The social service agency in a case like this is simply not going to be in a position where it can tell the judge definitively, don't look at Ms. Garbarek unless it's conducted such a search. Again, and this is unpublished as well, in the Welfare of the Child of LJ, the court said there is a strong preference for placement of a child with a relative if the parents are unable or unwilling to care for the child. And this is based upon a published case, In Re the Welfare of MN, 452 Northwest 2nd 236. The responsible social services agency shall exercise due diligence to identify and notify adult relatives prior to placement or within 30 days. That may or may not have been done. That's not terribly important because she filed a petition, so obviously she had some kind of notice. What's important, though, is what happens after the notice is given and what the welfare agency does. The district court concluded in this case, there is not clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Sheeler's petition to transfer permanent legal and physical custody to a relative should be granted. But that is not the standard. Although there are no cases which directly address the issue, the standard for the grant of custody to a relative seems to be that there is a preference for the relative and there should be at least preponderance of the evidence and probably clear and convincing evidence that the child shouldn't go to a relative. Suppose Mr. Sheeler had custody of the child and transferred it to a relative. Why would he have to produce clear and convincing evidence to vet that transaction? And if that's the case, certainly when we have something as important as a CHIPS petition and a TPR, the presumption should be in favor of the relative. So the court used the wrong standard in determining that the petition shouldn't be granted to Ms. Garbarek. Similarly, with respect to reasonable efforts, in the second CHIPS petition against MS, the child was removed from his mother, but there are no allegations against MS himself. Therefore, he did not fail to correct any of the conditions forming the basis of the petition, and the idea that his presence at the home of Ms. Garbarek would be prejudicial to the child is purely speculative. Now, I'll answer any questions that the court may have. I could touch briefly upon why the record is insufficient with regard to MS, I keep wanting to use his name, himself. But I think the big issue here is relative search. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mack. You will have time for rebuttal, of course. Counsel for respondent. Go ahead and just begin speaking. That will draw the camera to your location.
I would refresh the court that the standard of review for the court.
Am I just noting your appearance before you begin?
Oh, certainly.
Thank you.
David Torgelson appearing before Renville, before the court for Renville County Human Services.
Thank you very much.
The respondent. As the Court of Appeals is aware, the standard of review is very high in terms of a reviewing court overturning a termination of parental rights. The standard of review is that the Court of Appeals is to sustain the findings of fact unless clearly erroneous, and also short of an abuse of discretion, the statutory basis and best interest tests for the child should be upheld. I would note initially that counsel almost seems to concede that there were statutory grounds for termination of parental rights here, specifically looking at appellant's reply brief and kind of focusing on the grounds of palpable unfitness and also that the child is in foster care. Also, with regard to the weighing the best interests of the child, the trial court's order I believe page 21 of the appendix addresses those factors on how the child has thrived in his new placement and the problems that there were in the old placement. The appellant's focus today seems to be on the looking at the relative. In addition to concerns that were articulated by Human Services and the court about that Ms. Garbarek would not report or would side with her brother about allegations of drug abuse, I would also note in finding of fact number 14, the court was concerned about the fact that when an OFP was in place, and Ms. Garbrick may have been aware that the father was having unsupervised contacts with the mother and the child until the very end, but didn't tell the social worker because she just assumed that the social worker already knew about that. The Ms. Garbrick was well aware that any contacts here needed to be supervised, primarily through Harmony Visitation Center, and yet when having some knowledge that this unsupervised contact was occurring, did not contact social services with concerns about that. With regard to the drug use, even though Ms. Garbrick may not have personally witnessed drug use, she was well aware that Mr. Scheller had failed out of treatment several times, and there was very much concern on the part of the court and social services that she would not be willing to, I guess, report if there were concerns that he was using drugs in the front of the children. Guardian ad litem, social services, and so on have expressed their concerns, and the court did give that some credence, why she would serve more as an advocate for her brother and not the child here. And again, as Mr. Mack even conceded, Ms. Garbrick did have notice of a potential need for a relative to take over supervision of the child here. She did, to some credit to her, actually engage in some efforts to get licensed with Kandi Ojai County. I don't think it can be said that she was prevented from presenting her case as to why she should have custody of the child here. I would welcome any questions at this time.
To that last topic, if you would look at conclusion of law number 5, I'm a little concerned about that. The conclusion of the district court is that there is not clear and convincing evidence that Mr. S's petition to transfer permanent legal and physical custody to a relative should be granted. That does not seem like that's using the correct standard at the district court level.
Again, the verbiage on the standard might not be correct, but I believe in the rest of the court's findings of fact, they indicate why this relative placement would not be appropriate, regardless of the standard of review or the standard of proof that is used, the burden of proof that is used.
Well, customarily, when we apply the abuse of discretion standard of review, if the district court has erred with respect to the law that it applies, then we conclude in a lot of cases that that's an abuse of discretion.
And here I would argue there wasn't an abuse of discretion by the trial court on this termination, in that they weighed the merits of Ms. Garbrick possibly serving as a custodial parent.
Any other concerns, Mr. Smith?
The court has no further questions, Mr. Torgelson. If you have any other comments, you certainly have time left, but.
No, I don't believe I do. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Mack, rebuttal?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I'd start out with a general point. Concerns are not evidence.
What the county has been saying and what has been noted by the county officials in this case is that they had concerns about Ms. Garbarek. They had concerns about her loyalty. They had concerns about whether or not she would allow her brother to use dope in front of the children. And I submit that if you have concerns, given the statutory preference for relatives in a case like this, you investigate. You don't simply say there's no point in getting your foster care license because we aren't going to give you the child anyway. You've got to have a basis for that. For example, they could have asked that she do custody study. They could have asked her to have a parental capacities examination to see if any of these concerns were more than mere concerns. They didn't do any of these things. The second point that I would raise is that the general preference for the determination of the district court in TPR and CHIPS cases is true where there are issues of fact. Here there are problems with the errors of law in that Ms. Garbarek was not given the kind of relative information, and she was not given the kind of relative treatment that the statute demands. There has to be more than mere speculation, and there's no indication, for example, that drug abuse ever took place in her home or that ever took place in when she was around when MS was in fact using drugs. As to awareness of unsupervised contacts, Ms. Garbarek indicated that social services knew of the contacts and was aware of it, and there was no particular purpose in her having to say anything about that because there was already knowledge. In any event, that's very thin. About all we have that's hard is that she's very loyal to her brother and that her brother has had problems for a long time and she hasn't been able to correct them. The problem is it isn't her job to correct her brother's problems. I'm sure she tried, but her brother needs more help than that. She doesn't, and therefore she should have been considered as a custodian. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mack, and thank you, Mr. Torgelson. That concludes our calendar of oral arguments this morning, and so we are in recess. Drive safely.
Yes.